Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
Welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold, just because we wanted Johnny O to feel comfortable once again. He's back with us on a Monday. How are you, sir?
Back in the saddle on a Wild
West
Guns and Gold.
You are in the saddle, which
good,
is very
good
apropos.
Monday.
Absolutely. You have a good weekend?
I did. I'm a little thrown off. You know, Jeff Logan was in this seat for a couple weeks in a row, so yeah.
Well, actually, he sits where Tony's sitting. He said, tell me where the riffraff typically sit. I do not want to sit in the same place as your usual co-host.
So I'm riffraff. Is
yeah.
That
right?
Well,
according to Jeff, I'm not saying that. That's a direct quote from Jeff Logman.
All right, well,
I believe, or I may have that completely misconstrued.
Yeah, love a chat.
Yeah, so
chat.
Fat Tony's here. Hello, Fat Tony.
Hi, Mike.
I'm happy you've caught up on Walking Dead, except for last night's
episode.
Almost,
yeah.
Only took you months and months and months
to
do it.
Yeah, I watched the first three episodes of the season and then kind of went away.
Would you please tonight do us all a favor so I can get off your back and watch the replay of last night's episode of Better Call Saul.
I'll see what I can
right
do.
Right before part two of the two-night opener.
I am a little busy tonight.
I do have
two more hours of radio to do tonight.
So are you, Tony Smith?
We'll see. If I can do it this afternoon,
I will. Well, I guess you could watch it
if it's on demand, I will.
What time are you doing the show tonight?
8 to 10 with Paul Spicer.
Nice of him to know, right?
We switched it. The Jaguars aren't doing the Monday anymore.
Thank you.
7 to 9.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, he was,
I thought maybe you just didn't care.
He was so ready to. I'm trying to promote here. I know when it is, but we want the listeners to know when it is. I do a poor job of promoting
Tony. Every day. You don't even know when to show it.
Holy smokes, man. You're unbelievable.
Hey, it's a Wild West goal. Guns and gold money. Gotta be
get
ready.
It straight. Right. Don't put the gold before the guns.
No,
okay.
Never.
In this circumstance. Happy birthday, Jimmy Smith. Today, Jimmy Smith turns, I believe, 46 years old. Mm. 46 years young. I like to think. Anyway, I bet Jimmy could beat me in a foot race. We're about 46. I've been here for a few extra months, Jimmy. It doesn't matter. I have nothing on you.
Right no. And you know, boy, was he good.
He was. He was phenomenal.
To the highlights. You know. It was sort of like, I don't know how much we talked about it, but when you watch the football life they did on Jimmy and Keenan, I'm sure we talked about it in December, but it's easy to forget because of all Jimmy's gone through, because of the time that's passed, just how good he was. And, you know, you start talking about Hall of Fame Jaguars, on the field, certainly he had a Hall of Fame career.
Doesn't even get mentioned
no.
as a possible guy, and very comparable
but
numbers.
Players who played in that era and played him against him, they don't leave him out.
Five Pro Bowl appearances for Jimmy, five, 97, 98, 99. Yeah, five in a row, 97 through 2001. You know, the,
and probably could have made it. The year Keenan made it, which was 96.
Right.
Was the year Jimmy came on late, and when the Pro Bowl voting was done, I mean, Keenan deserved it that year. I'm not saying that. But when the Pro Bowl voting was done, I think there was a week or two left in the season back then when they did it. And Jimmy was still sort of peaking and still coming on. Could have made it more years than he made it.
This is interesting to me. I always like what Pro Football Reference, Pro Baseball Reference does this as well. They have the similarity scores, you know, which players at various points in your career – your careers were most like, like 3 years in, 7 years in, 10 years in. Where do you line up with other players who play that same amount of years? You know, obviously Jimmy early on, injured, had a slow start to his career. 3 years into his career, here were the similar players to Jimmy Smith. Darius Thompson, okay, Tim Smith, Ollie Smith, I don't know if that's just my last name, Sean LaChapelle, Ray Jarvis, Brian Gilmore, Tim George, DeVard Darling, Sanjay Beach, and believe it or not, Tony, the guy we saw at the Hilton Garden Inn and as the all-time example of a guy who had a huge preseason and never did anything in the regular season, none other than Billy Davis, the former Dallas Cowboy receiver. So he was going nowhere fast.
Well, he had played for the Cowboys. I'm trying to think. It was 92, 93 he was with Dallas, right?
Yes.
And then he wasn't in football in 94 and then had a year in Jacksonville where he was really just kind of getting going. Started to show something at the end last year. But I can remember standing out of the practice field 96, me and Prisco and people during OTAs. And credit Pete. I remember Pete saying, you know, Jimmy's going to be, you know, started to see it in practice. And Pete saying, Jimmy's going to be good. Jimmy's going to be good. I remember me and Frangie standing next to him being like, Jimmy Smith, what are you talking? You know, it hadn't done anything. And sure enough, that year, once Andre Rison left, all of a sudden, Jimmy's in the lineup and starting to use that body, starting to use that speed, starting to use that size. And I was really a unique receiver for his day in the combination of size and speed.
When he's all done, his career most aligns with these players. Bob Hayes, Hall of Famer. Lance Allworth, Hall of Famer. Cliff Branch, excellent player,
sure.
Great deep threat. Del Schaffner, don't know a thing about him. Mark Clayton, mm-hmm. of the Clayton-Duper combo. Isaac Bruce, and numbers very comparable. Gary Clark. Rod Smith, who I think is typically a very underrated player. And Mark mm-hmm. Duper as well. So both the Marx brothers. I mean, so you're talking about a lot of talented guys. Duper and Clayton both in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think either of them are.
Neither of them are in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
No, you're right. You're right because it would indicate right here that they are. You're right. Neither one of them are. Rod Smith has almost identical numbers to Jimmy, and
right.
he got two Super Bowl rings.
And there's people, you know, there's people who follow the Skins and follow the NFL back then who believe that Gary Clark was as good or better than Art Monk for a certain amount of time.
For a period of time, yeah, I mean, right.
In terms of impact, in terms of being the one at times on some Super Bowl teams. So, Jimmy certainly. One thing that works against him is he lost years at the beginning and the end, which, you know, it was 3 years at the start of his career where he didn't really put up any numbers
right.
toward what he eventually got. And then obviously at the end of his career, you would think he could have played longer. Would those 3,000 yards or whatever it was he lost
get him? Who knows how many? I mean, he's got 800 and some odd receptions. He would be easy. He could, you know, might have 1,200 receptions.
Right. So, I mean, we always talk about Hall, and we can get sort of worked up about that. Jaguars fans who saw the guy play, people who were around in that era, the people, you know, that he touched and saw him, they know that this was a guy who had a special career.
I think it's Jimmy and Fred are a coin flip behind Tony Boselli as the best player to ever put on a Jaguar uniform.
Yeah, and it's funny. You get more arguments, you know, and at least a couple times a week I'll get Ozone emails. Should this guy be in the Hall? And it always centers around those three. But you get more arguments, and I've argued more Fred versus Tony, and that always seems to be the argument that it comes down to. I don't really know how you get Jimmy Smith out of that conversation. He had the career that Fred Taylor did, certainly. I think it should be a three-way, you know, conversation.
Right. He got recognized more than Fred did. Fred played in an era too where, you know, you're only taking three running backs mm-hmm. out of the AFC to the Pro Bowl, right? And the guys that played
yeah.
in that era were ridiculous.
Fred had some years that were epic years, and this is. I covered him 3 years before I left. The 2000 season that Fred had, which is always a season that's overlooked, when he was hurt the first, I want to say he was out the first two games, came back against Indy. He had a knee that he did in training camp. Out of the first two games, came back against Indy on a Monday night where the Jaguars got killed and had a really slow start. At that point, reeled off 9 straight 100-yard games. That was the year that he went off against Pittsburgh up there and set the record in Three Rivers. The most remarkable stretch for a running back I ever covered in terms of every game he would burst off a 45, you know, 30, 50-yard run. That's hard to do in the NFL.
No, no question.
And the ability to get a breakaway run on a team that year that was not going that well. And they kind of turned to him to get back. I mean, they started bad that year. They lost to Washington out here, didn't make the playoffs, but really turned to him and sort of changed the dynamics of the offense. And I think he had more years like that. I didn't cover after that. But 98 and 2000, his rookie year and third year, were remarkable years, and he put up a couple more.
I think his rookie year in particular,
yeah.
well, he should have been a Pro Bowler. But if you look
in 2000,
back,
he didn't make it for the same reason that Jimmy didn't make it in 96. 2000, he got hot late.
Right.
And he really started running off numbers, and you would sort of watch the numbers each week, and he was trying to catch up because he had no yards in the first three games. So I think it was LT that year, may have been.
You had LT, you had Portis, you had either Priest Holmes or Larry Johnson every year, you had Edger and James. Right. I mean, I don't know that particular year, but those in that era, and I'm leaving guys out. There were guys that were putting
He was always like the fourth guy yards-wise. And again, you know, when I was covering Indianapolis for those 10 years, most of those years Fred was there. Fred was the guy that they worried about. And there were some years where that was a good rivalry. They worried about the front on defense being able to pressure Peyton with four. That bothered him a little, but what they really talked about all week was figuring out a way to stop Fred Taylor.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. I mean,
he was the guy they worried about, and he was the guy, you know. Yeah, I mean, he was a special guy that you had to try to stop, and all three of them were.
Yeah,
stop Baselli.
You hope you appreciate it when you have it that good. You know, and Jag fans certainly look back wistfully at that time.
All three of them played on the same team.
Right.
You also had Searcy. You also had Keenan. You also, I mean, it was.
Even Brunell was a three-time Pro Bowler. I mean, they were absolutely loaded back then. In honor of Jimmy's birthday today, he, of course, half of the Thunder and Lightning combo, Jay Smooth. One of his nicknames. He's got several out there. Today's Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you simply, what is your favorite Jaguar nickname of all time? I go with Ozone, but I think that's the obvious one.
Other than that.
Other than Ozone.
Let's just take that, put that over here, and say other than that.
We don't need a landslide. We want some variety in there. So
I
want to
be fair
Ozone,
to Jay Smooth. Right?
I think that's
it's his birthday.
You can vote for Jimmy if you want to. You just cannot vote for any present company. I've got a few nicknames as well.
Right. I bet you do.
Not as quite as flattering as Ozone, however, but I've got them here. Today we'll take a look at a number of things. Tyler Dunn up in Green Bay wrote an interesting article on free agent wide receivers and whether or not Randall Cobb is likely to return. It's still a guessing game, even after reading the article, but kind of ranked the free agent wide receivers that are available out there. And we talked about some of the high-end guys, but it was interesting when you start calculating which guys may re-up with their club or get franchised, exactly what's going to be left. We'll take a look at that a little bit today. Likewise, with Amari Cooper, you know, I went back and I was looking at some stuff on NFL.com. Bucky Brooks ranked the draft classes of all the AFC South teams, so we'll touch on that again today as well. But Daniel Jeremiah does his... I think it's, what is it, 5 for 5? What is it? He does a little thing where he asks 5, like, personnel guys around the league a question, whatever that happens to be the question. I went back. He did one in December that I thought was interesting, looking back on it in hindsight, about Amari Cooper and where he would rank compared to the guys who were in last year's class of wide receivers, which arguably the most impactful rookie class of wide receivers in NFL history.
Right.
So we'll touch on that a little bit as well. Todd Wash is going to join us coming up at the top of the next hour at 11 o'clock Eastern time today. Todd Wash, of course, coaches your defensive line now, also the running game coordinator. Mm-hmm. So how will he handle the split duties of defense and offense, and is that a natural fit when you're a defensive line coach who knows what gives you trouble in opposing running games? Will that give him an advantage helping to put together some of the running game plans for the Jaguars coming up? All that, your calls welcome as well. 641-1010. If you want to tweet the show, at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Just getting rolling. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Glad you're here with us. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony. Clarification for my own purposes and all of yours as well, who don't just tune me out and listen with one ear, which you probably should. Listen with the good ear. All right, Todd Wash, finally explain to me, Johnny O, running game coordinator.
He's basically coordinating the run defense.
The run defense.
Yes.
Which, honestly, if you didn't know Todd Wash is a defensive line coach.
Right.
And you said we hired a running game coordinator, to me, I would think to coordinate your running game, which
argument could be made that we do know that he's a defensive line coach.
We do know that, but this, when it happened, I want to say O'Halloran was in. I don't know who was in here. We were talking about it last week, and I said, "All right, well, I guess you'd know what makes it difficult on your front four. What kind of running it? So maybe he's going to have."
Well,
some
when you
kind
said
of
it, I was like,
that.
"Wait a minute, am I reading this right?" So I actually went and asked. Yeah, and I assumed that He's the run defense coordinator. It's probably the best way to put it.
I was able to trick you for a short, brief while, so I consider that a win for me, that I could confuse the ozone.
You're a little Jedi mind game.
Just for a moment there. All right. Todd Walsh will join us regardless in 40 minutes here.
Whatever he is.
In the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. He's a fired up guy, and he's going to come across his table if I get his job description wrong as far as that goes. Is he the one guy who's above reproach right now? Because, I mean, everyone universally feels that was the best position group on the football team last year.
Yeah, you know, he did a good job, and he'd also be the first one to tell you he had a bunch of veterans who are ready to go at a spot in their career where they were very coachable and could take what he was saying and translate it to the field. So, he obviously did a good job and has done a good job both years he's been here.
If you just looked at the Jags, right, and we follow them, we think we have a sense of what they want to do and in the draft, and it, obviously it's dependent on free agency and how that goes and what's available to you when your pick comes up. But if you just looked at the team, if you were in Topeka, say, let's look at the Jags. Where do they need help? What should their focus be? You wouldn't necessarily think defensive line, right? Because they had a pretty
on
good
paper,
sack total.
Statistically, on right, paper. You would, right.
That's why I think it's interesting. You know, I wonder if when Bucky Brooks of NFL.com, who is kind of a draft nick himself, and he does his own mock drafts for NFL.com, when he writes a story about any team, you know, is he, what he's talking about, this team's focus in the draft, is he trying to read the tea leaves and what, you know, there are a million mock drafts out there that haven't taken either Leonard Williams or Randy Gregory. Not many other options out there, right, as far as the mock drafts go at this point
that's
in time.
Sure, that's the right. There's some you see with Shane Ray, others you see with...
but it's typically defensive line.
But it's in
line.
I haven't seen one yet that's not defensive line.
I'm trying to think if I have.
Not that I consider somebody who's
legitimate in this little weird subculture.
Right, whatever legitimacy is in mock drafts.
Right, which is kind of
let me know if you figure that
out. But so defensive line seems to be the consensus way that they'll go with that pick. And so I wonder, is Bucky Brooks really looking at the team and saying, wow, they need defensive line, or everyone's saying they're going to go defensive line, and I'm going to kind of fall in line with that. But that being said, he graded the AFC South drafts. He's going to do it for every division. I believe he started with the AFC South, and I saw this over the weekend. And the Jags grade out the best in the division, which is nice, I suppose. I think a C- for the Texans, a C+ for the Colts, a straight C for the Tennessee Titans. I believe it wasn't a B+. For the Jacksonville Jaguars, and really said, you know, in addition, you expect, you know, jury's out on Blake Bortles,
sure,
right? But he said, particularly Allen Robinson, thought he did pretty well, but you expect that of second round picks, you know, to a certain degree. And much as we've talked about, I think a lot, where he really, you win the draft for Dave Caldwell the last couple of years, the, you know, Linder and Colvin and Hearns as an undrafted guy, even, and just Bowanko getting a starter in the sixth round like that. So clearly, you know, the back half is where the
Marquise Lee
Jaguars
showed something at the end of the year. I mean,
and he rolled that in with Allen Robinson. He was talking about both of those guys.
I would say B+ is a pretty good grade, considering that I think nationally it would be tough to grade Bortles very high. So, you know, I think Bortles, you know, for rookie quarterback, okay. But, yeah, it has a chance to be a remarkably good draft if Blake Bortles is what the Jaguars think he is.
I think, you know, most people are taking a, well,
right,
we think he's got the tools. It was a difficult situation. He was surrounded by rookies. You know, he was a rookie himself. Whereas he didn't maybe perform as steadily as Teddy Bridgewater or Derek Carr did at times. Well, Carr was up and down as well.
But it
had a lot less to work with.
If you consider if Telvin Smith, Brandon Linder, and Aaron Colvin are the players that they appeared to be through much of last season, then it's a remarkable draft after the third round.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's as good a draft as this franchise has had after the third round, I would say. I'm not looking at every draft they've had, but it's remarkably good for after the third round. If if those three guys continue to develop as they have, because they could all three be Pro Bowlers.
Sure. I mean, the base they could have provided themselves in the back half of the draft last year is remarkable. If those guys continue to develop on the plane, it looks like they were on their rookie year. And I think it's interesting when you compare Bortles to Carr and Bridgewater. Coming out, I think everyone kind of thought that Bridgewater, that's about what you were going to get from Teddy. Mm-hmm. But that's about what you expect him to be his whole career is about on that plane. He was as NFL-ready as any of the quarterbacks coming into this draft, and he played like the most NFL-ready quarterback coming into this draft. Bortles was the least experienced of these guys, and so I think there's a lot of people who take a look at what he did in his rookie year, and we'll see if they're right or wrong about it, including us here in Jacksonville that are saying, yeah, this guy didn't have a whole lot of time playing in college. He came into the NFL. He wasn't supposed to play his rookie year. He did anyway. There were a lot of things, very young pieces around him, so we all think he's going to develop into something, and that really is the key to everything in Jacksonville, is whether Blake Bortles takes that step or not. But when you look at what they did in that draft last year, potentially getting two guys that upgrade your receiver core, plus all that talent in the back end of the draft. I mean, it really could be a remarkable draft in Jacksonville Jaguars history when everything is said and done.
I know a lot of people are, I say a lot, the perception I have is that a lot of people are interested in Amari Cooper for the Jaguars because I get a decent amount of tweets on that and emails and stuff like that, but you don't know if that's, you know, is that representative of how many, you know, is everyone who wants Amari Cooper tweeting me, or is that mean that
no, I get a pretty good amount too.
Out there?
You know, I think it's tough to go receiver when you drafted two last year, when you've got somebody already playing in Allen Hurns. And there are people who are not even sure he's going to be the first receiver taken.
Right.
Kevin White is very close.
Daniel Jeremiah likes Kevin White out of West Virginia the best.
And that, you know, okay, then you sub out Kevin White. Do they need a big play impact receiver? Well, they've already got two guys who are developing in that direction. If you draft a wide receiver this year, you're going to have another guy who's developing in that direction, and that's okay. You had a lot of guys make a huge impact at the position last year. I don't know that you – again, I just don't know that you draft with the next year in mind. And that's why I like the idea of a defensive front, linebacker, pass rusher type guy in this draft.
Well, you mean you don't draft with next year's draft in mind, or?
You don't draft with improving your team dramatically next year in mind.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Just like on a one-year kind of situation.
You draft for your foundation, for your core over the next 4 or 5 years. You usually don't get dramatic results in the win-loss record based on your draft that year.
The Daniel Jeremiah, he writes for NFL.com, by the way, is probably one of the rising draft analysts out there, more respected, maybe one of the top five guys who do this.
Certainly he's becoming NFL's guy. Mayock's not as involved on the website.
Right. Mayock has always told you, too, by the way. Mayock says, I pretty much focus on the top 100 prospects. Mm-hmm. He's not Mel Kiper, who's going to sit there in round six.
Who is?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. But, you know, Kiper is impressive in that almost without exception,
he knows
you can't get one past him. No. That you know, he can, off the top of his head, tell you something about almost every guy who gets drafted on day three of the draft, which is very impressive. Which, going back, who was it? Was it the safety? Was it – who was the guy the Raiders drafted in round two? A few years
Mike
ago.
Mitchell.
It wasn't Mike Mitchell?
Yeah, it was Mike Mitchell, and nobody knew who the heck
he was.
He's
with Pittsburgh now, right? And Kiper didn't even know who he was, and he got taken in round two, which was stunning that
I was listening on the radio when he got picked, and John Clayton, I think it was, on the radio, I could hear him flipping through pages, and he's like, I have something like 350 players in front of me right now. Mike Mitchell is not even listed among those players, and the Raiders just selected him in the second round.
He's just a guy, but he plays, you know, he's better than, at least he made a team, you know what I mean? I mean, there are worse picks out there, but the point being, Daniel Jeremiah does a series where he asks front office types kind of, and personnel guys, like, what do you think of this prospect? What do you think of that guy? And so he asked about Amari Cooper and where he would fit in with last year's class. Now, keep in mind, he did this in December, but it was after the game in which he made the three-fingered catch, okay, because one guy referenced that. But it wasn't at the end of the season. I would find it hard right now. that, I mean, how could you not take Odell Beckham Jr. over anybody? Because you've seen him in 14 games. Put up 1,300 yards, light up the league in a 12 game, I should say, period of time. But every single one of the personnel guys said they take Sammy Watkins over Amari Cooper. Two or three of them said they take Mike Evans over Amari Cooper.
And Beckham too, right?
And maybe four of them said Beckham. One of them only, I think, had Watkins ahead of him. A lot of them said Brandon Cooks would be the next guy right behind Cooper, although Kelvin Benjamin, I thought, played very well last year, but you can argue how you like. But they said, for the most part, I would say on average, he'd be the third or fourth guy on most of these guys' draft boards compared to last year's group. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean, you know, that maybe some of those guys were underdrafted. If you went back now, maybe Odell Beckham Jr. goes a lot higher. And certainly, you're not thinking Buffalo's going to make that deal to get Sammy Watkins, because when you see what these guys were able to do as a class. But, you know, that's the thing I wonder. You know, I saw a comparison that said he is kind of an undersized A.J. Green. You know, well, what does that mean? A.J. Green, so much of his game is the ability to go up above you because he's so big.
You know who doesn't want to be an undersized A.J. Green?
Who would that be?
A.J. Green.
A.J. Green, right. But I just, the more I think about it, you know, you sink two picks in the wide receiver position in the second round last year. And, well, would Amari Cooper upgrade this team?
Sure.
I think he would help, absolutely. There's the chance Justin Blackman comes back at some point. There's a chance. It is a moot question because they're picking up a Torrey Smith or a Michael Crabtree or a Randall Cobb or somebody in free agency, and then you pretty much filled out your wide receiver core.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know. It's going to be curious to see what they do in free agency at wide receiver. Because Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee and Allen Hurns are a pretty good young core, and in the second year they should be a lot better. So it's going to be curious to see how hard they go after it. When that class sort of clears out before free agency begins, which it's going to, Dez Bryant's not going to be out there. Demaryius Thomas isn't going to be out there.
Those two we're sure of. The rest of them, you can make a case either way.
Yeah, and it's funny this time of year. Most of these guys, you read just as many legitimate reports that they're going to be with their former team as with their not. Like, you'll see something on a document, on Sue, one day that the Lions are the favorite, and the next day that he's going to hit free agency. I mean, that, you know, so you just don't know yet. And that's why the next couple of weeks are going to be so fascinating. On the receiver front, on the free safety front, the linebacker, I mean, there's some positions that I think the Jaguars would be very interested in, and it'll depend on who's out there.
All right, coming up, we'll do an early this date in football history in the Honda Drive around the NFL, including a free agent to be who just had his legal situation apparently cleared up in large measure. We'll tell you who that is in a moment. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, this date in football history. Coming up, top of the hour, Todd Wash, Jaguar defensive line coach, joins us here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. This date in football history, January 9th, 1969. Jay Smooth, happy birthday. Jimmy Smith, one of the three greatest on-the-field performers for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You may think he's the best. Certainly, he's in that conversation.
You wouldn't be ridiculous to
me,
to argue it.
Marcus Pollard just pointed at himself. I don't think you were an on-the-field performer for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Marcus, but, you know, a pretty fair performer in your own right. And as far as I know, it's not Marcus Pollard's birthday. So
I don't think so.
Jim Miller, another great Jaguar for a cup of coffee.
Hey, birthday, Jim.
Other two teams he played for, one of them ZZ.
Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Bears.
The Bengals Bears?
Is it Bears?
He went Bengals Bears, I believe.
Is it Bears?
Oh, Bears? Tony, any guess?
No,
it'd be
idea.
A stab in the dark, and the Atlanta Falcons would have been the correct stab for you to take at that point in time. That's all I got for you today.
Yesterday is.
Yesterday was the anniversary of the NFL draft, but that's not today.
Hello, off season.
It's also will be remembered.
Happy birthday, Jay Smooth.
No, I think it'll be remembered as the day that Todd Wash lost the job he never had.
I know, right? He's going to be upset to find out. Wait a minute.
That'd be the first question. How upset are you to find out
that you're not coordinating the Jaguars running game? That's amazing. Todd Wash coming up in about 20 minutes here on Jaguars Today. This state in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission, to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product for you at a competitive price and still give you unsurpassed customer service. Okay, you can get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, Baltimore Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti had to know where the Super Bowl ring that he gave to Jamal Lewis after the team's win over the 49ers in Super Bowl 47 would wind up. I mean, he had to know. Jamal Lewis, the former Ravens running back, filed for bankruptcy 3 years after he had retired. Bisciotti decided to get a ring for Lewis and a handful of other Ravens players that had laid a foundation for the franchise following their most recent Super Bowl victory. Lewis's ring fetched $50,000 at an auction earlier this week. The last year of Jason Pierre-Paul's contract has been voided, as expected. The move allows JPP to become a free agent in March, assuming the Giants don't place a franchise tag on him. The charges against defensive end Greg Hardy for domestic violence have reportedly been dropped. Hardy is a free agent, now just 26 years old. He already has two double-digit sack seasons under his belt. The NFL could still hand out some sort of punishment to Hardy, who spent last season getting paid to not play, but who knows if the league will take that kind of stance. Reportedly, he came to some kind of agreement with his accuser away from the courtroom. She didn't show up to testify, and thus the charges were dropped.
Yeah, here's the agreement. How much money, and we'll agree on a figure, and you're not going to show up to testify. I mean, that's he bought her off is what he did. It's pretty obvious.
And it becomes an interesting story going into the offseason now. Greg Hardy was kind of, you know, you weren't talking a whole lot about Greg Hardy as a free agent, and I'm still not sure that the Jaguars will be talking about Greg Hardy. But this is a 26-year-old guy who had two back-to-back double-digit sack seasons before he missed all of last year.
And on top of that, is known as one of the best run-defending defensive ends in the league, too.
So he could be the guy as far as just from a talent perspective at the top of the defensive ends in free agency. What teams are willing to take a stab at Greg Hardy given this off-the-field stuff and given how strong the NFL is trying to be with these kind of issues right now?
You know, on the one hand, you say, well, he basically served a year suspension. Mm-hmm. In a sense, he didn't get to play for most of you. I understand.
He got paid that franchise tag.
I understand, but, you know, he still didn't get to play, so he had something taken away from him. He's not going to get convicted in a court of law over this, it appears. But we've seen the testimony, or if you care to, the testimony's been out there, you know, of throwing his girlfriend around, throwing her down on a bed covered in guns and basically threatening her life and all these different things. A real peach of a guy,
yeah.
It seems. But, you know, someone's going to give it. Look, Richie Incognito's back in the league, right? Mm-hmm. And he had a bad rep. I'm not saying what Richie Incognito did was any better or worse than what Greg Hardy did, but Richie Incognito at one point in time was radioactive and, you know, has Greg Hardy served enough of a penance that someone is going to aggressively court him in free agency? I was reading a story today, John.
I bet somebody will.
You think he'll get a top end of the market kind of contract?
Well,
his play on the field indicates he should.
You would think there would be some sort of a, you know, something to protect the team in that situation. But it's the old thing. If there's three people involved, meaning if there's three teams involved, then, you know, supply demand takes over and he gets the contract that his play on the field deserves.
By the way, the district attorney apparently has been unable to find Hardy's girlfriend. Joe Person of the Charlotte Observer, I believe, wrote that there's, I don't know if the phrasing he used, but basically I think he's reporting that there is believed to be, that's pretty vague, reporting that there's believed to be an agreement between those two. I don't want to say that he reported definitively, but that seemed to be the gist of it. I would make sure she's still breathing first if I'm the district attorney before I dropped any charges, I think. He can't find her. That seems a little ominous to me. I think she's just taking her money and running and keeping her mouth shut, and that's her prerogative,
sure.
I guess, if she were in that situation. But, you know, I was reading a story this morning that indicated, let's say they were going to get, he was going to get a 6-game suspension, which I think is the standard now under the domestic violence policy.
Sounds
for,
right,
for
yeah.
A first offense. Does that sound right to you?
If I remember and read it right, yes.
The expectation was in the story that he would probably be in line for a 6-game suspension. And the thought, it ran through all the teams that could be in need of them, and that it would have the cap space to do it potentially and all this other stuff. And they, one nice thing, they kind of scratched the Jaguars off the list because they felt like, you know what, they don't really need him necessarily right now. Not that you couldn't use him and not that they won't look to increase, but they weren't so bad rushing the passer last year that you thought, wow.
No, but again, I wouldn't anticipate that being something the Jaguars do, but they still need an end who's a big, big, big time pass rusher.
Oh, I don't. I'd rather go after Jason Pierre-Paul.
Especially at that age,
right? Well, they're similar
that age
ages.
Is very appealing,
and you know he doesn't have this kind of behavior in his resume. And
right.
I mean, I think if you follow the Greg Hardy story at all, you know that something probably happened. You know, I mean.
It's hard to believe it didn't.
Right. And so the article was speculating ultimately this is the kind of move Seattle would do to, you know, if he really was going to get suspended for 6 games, he'd get a 1-year prove-it-to-me contract and go load up with the Seahawks, stay out of trouble for, you know, 10 games and, you know, make their front four even more dominant.
See, JPP's interesting because he performed his best when the Giants line was performing very well around him too, if you recall. And with this defensive line right now on the Jaguars, there's enough guys performing at a high level that it would not be easy to always double team the outside end.
And always double teaming the outside end is not the worst. If that's what you got, if you gave him a bunch of money and he was only an 8-sack guy instead of a 15-sack guy, but he was getting double-teamed on every play.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, you would expect that those numbers for other guys are going to increase along with that. So, maybe it's tough to calculate the direct impact of something like that.
Right. We go back to free agency, and every year free agency is funny. It's much like the draft in the sense that you talk it, you talk it, you talk it, and up until March 9th, it looks one way. And on March 10th, everything we talk about is blowing up, and they're going after guys that none of us are talking about because it doesn't behoove them to even whisper to people who they're interested in because they want to make sure that on that first day of free agency, they're out there and they're on the guy that they want. And there's no reason to tell anybody on March 8th who that is. So a lot of these guys that we're talking about, I expect them to sign a couple of different positions that may even be positions that we're not thinking are huge need positions because they have so many areas where they need to get better that if they see a guy who can make an impact, I wouldn't be surprised to see them sign somebody where we're all thinking, oh, they're fine there.
Do you think they'll ultimately, and what depends on who re-signs with their own team, what ultimately is available? So we don't know. But what is your best professional guess on will they sign two guys that most fans would consider, or most in the know fans would consider real impact type players. It's one thing to improve your overall roster of talent, and that's fine, and create competition. But I'm talking about, like, Bulaga, maybe not, a casual fan might not follow offensive line, but if you follow the NFL and you've got Brian Bulaga, you'd be like, wow, that's a significant signing for this football team. Will they sign two guys that the typical learned fan would feel that way about?
I would expect them to pursue two guys. Now,
I'd expect them to pursue more than two.
Well, no.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll pursue more than two. And again, it's hard to know what names are. You know what I mean? But, yeah, I would expect them to pursue players of that ilk, which they really haven't. And except for Alex Mack, they really haven't pursued that guy that all the fans were very, very, very excited about. Now, whether they get them, it's so hard to know. I mean, there's so many factors that goes into whether they get them. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to be, I think, significantly more active in that fun, you know, for lack of a better word, sexy free agent than they have in the last couple of years. I don't think there's any question.
What's the best number you've heard in terms of cap space?
In that 60, 63.
Call it 60, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's sort of what.
Pretty safe saying 60 million.
But it's so hard to know what even that means. Because once free agency starts, that number, they have a lot of room. They have room to do what they need to do, is the best way to put it.
Right. And I guess to me, 60 million.
And there are many teams that don't.
It's hard to spend 60 million.
I could pull it off.
Well, unless you're getting frontline guys in NFL free agency, right? Unless you get a couple of the, I mean, unless you're signing a couple of guys for around a $10 million a year salary, which keep in mind, that's, it's going to take that to get a Randall Cobb, right? I mean, it's going to take an average of around $10 million a year probably to get him the franchise number for Green Bay to keep him as 12.7, but that doesn't mean he would get, you know, 12.7 on average over a 4-year deal, but he might be looking for 20 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And so a $10 million average for a couple of guys, even then, leaves you with some of the most cap room of any team in the league. So, you know, the idea that the Jags are going to spend $60 million, and I'm not saying that everyone's pushing that idea, but I'm sure some fans think, hey, this is the year we're going to, just, you know, it's tough. You got to find the guys to spend the money on, right?
You still have to find the guys to spend the money on, because you don't want to be stuck having to play guys who can't play. So you want to make sure that you spend it correctly.
All right, Todd Wash, defensive line coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He probably won't want to get into specifics of guys they might bring in, but we'll talk about the current crop of defensive linemen and where they can go in 2015. Certainly, we all feel the best unit on the team in 2014. He joins us next, Mike Dempsey, John Oger, Fat Tony. It's a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday on Jaguars Today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. Jaguars Today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Wild West, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Everything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. And Wild West will even meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. And as John Osher will tell you, they will allow you to trade your gold for guns if you so choose.
They will.
You can trade your gold
you
for
go
guns.
Both
We've
ways.
Always known you can trade your gold for guns. I don't know if you can trade your guns in and they will buy them from you in gold.
See, that's where I'm at with it. So
I'm thinking no. You have, a surplus of guns.
I got guns sitting around the house, and I'm thinking,
closet full of guns.
I need some gold.
Right.
For goodness sake.
Wild West might be your spot. Check them out online at guns4jax.com, guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com, or visit them on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West. Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Todd Wash, defensive line coach, momentarily will join us here. Mentioned earlier, Tyler Dunn with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did a story on whether or not you're going to see Randall Cobb escape from Green Bay's clutches and get to free agency. We'll look at that coming up. He ranked the top 10 unrestricted free agent wide receivers as well. And, I think it'll be interesting. I think a lot of us realize who the big, big names are. We'll kind of run through that list coming up in about 10, 15 minutes here. But right now let's welcome in a guy that, as far as we're concerned, should have no issues with job security. Did a terrific job last year with the Jags defensive line. Todd Wash, coach from the defensive line. Coach, I gotta say, when it was announced, was it last week, you're gonna be the running game coordinator?
Yes.
It threw a curveball at me. I thought, is he gonna coordinate the offensive running game? Is he gonna use his expertise on the defensive line to know what gave him troubles? But you're gonna actually.
He basically had you as a rising star.
I thought you were
gonna
be an OC, DC candidate, head coach by midseason on some other club. Thanks for taking a few minutes. How you doing?
Good. I appreciate being here.
Well, I tell you, we appreciate the way the defensive line played, last year. It had to be certainly a bummer for you down the stretch to see a couple of your key guys get hurt. What are you expecting in terms of availability for guys like Sendarek Marks and Roy Miller throughout the course of the offseason?
Starting off with Roy, you know, they went in and repaired some cartilage with him, so he'll be back at the beginning of training camp. We won't need him at all in the offseason here. He'll stay and work out and rehab and that kind of stuff. So that one's not as big a concern as Sendarek. With Sendarek, you know, we got to see, I think it's 8 months or eight months, I think it is the opening of training camp. And that's awful quick to come back from an ACL tear. So he's a little bit of a concern for us, and making sure, you know, we got quality backups there with Ziggy Hood. But he's going to be a question mark for us going into the season. But he's working his tail off right now.
Well, and talk about Roy. You say you don't need him in the off season. Mm-hmm. He's a veteran enough guy where that doesn't concern you, I would think.
Yeah, and he's been in our system twice. You know, it's totally different than what he did in Tampa with the old regime down there. But, you know, he knows the scheme. He's a student of the game. He'll be in all of our meetings and studying just like he's always done. But he physically doesn't need to go out there and continue to tear his body down. You know, he goes through a lot down in there, mm-hmm. even more than Senderic does. It's a different man's game down in there right. at nose guard. So it's good. You know, he'll be fresh coming into training camp, and he'll be ready to go.
Might actually be better for him not to have that wear and tear in the long run.
Yeah, it really will. And, you know, not only that, but we're going to be able to continue to bring Avery along, who had a real nice year for us. And, you know, he'll get even more and more reps being a young player that he is. You know, we're excited about the development of Avery.
Todd Walsh here with us, Jaguars defensive line coach. John, go ahead if you have another point.
You talked so much last offseason, and so did Gus, about getting the guys in with the ability to rotate more. And yes. not have guys in the field quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
As you look back now, with a chance to look back on last season, were you able to do that as much, and did it benefit as much as you thought it would?
Yeah, it really did. You know, just starting at our big end spot with Tyson and Red, they basically went 50-50 on the reps throughout the season. And so you could see them being fresh in the fourth quarter if we needed to get off the field on first and second down. Senderic, it showed a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes he played a little bit more than we wanted, and he was a little bit wore down. But you can see his production from last year to this year really showed up. And it really showed up on third down rushing the passer. And, you know, having 8.5 sacks and that kind of stuff, that definitely showed. Mm-hmm. What hurt us a little bit this year is when Brancher went down. Then we couldn't rotate Clem. You know, Clem's a little bit older guy, and you got to make sure that he's fresh. And that hurt us a little bit, but we seen it early on. But there's a lot of good things happen because we dressed 8 or 9 guys every week.
Now, Clem did a pretty good job playing through that. I mean, was able to put up the numbers, even though you would have liked to have rotated him more.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He would have been even a better player if we could have rotated him. You know, at the end of the games, he'd be up around 60, 70 snaps mm-hmm. some games. That's too many.
Right.
And if we want him to play at that high level and become that double-digit sack guy, that's what we got to make sure he stays fresh. And Brancher will be healthy, and he'll be ready to go.
Dale, what did you see from him in terms of his development? It seemed like when he was able to stay on the field last year, the light was really starting to come on for him.
Yeah, it came on a year ago, really, and, you know, just addressing some things that we didn't like, to be honest with you. And he addressed them. He does exactly what you ask him to do. And, you know, I think the first 5 games, he had 3 sacks in 5 games. You could really start to see the impact he could have as a rusher, and then all of a sudden he gets nicked up. So, you know, he's continuing. He's working out in California right now, and you know, we expect some real good things from this year's rushing the passer and on first and second down.
Tyson Alualu came in. He gets a bad rap, I think. I mean, he's a good player, but we understand the circumstance. You're a top 10 pick, and yep. for a lot of people, it's a who is that kind of pick. So you're expecting a Pro Bowler perennially when you, mm-hmm. you draft a guy that high. He's been a very good player, and I thought probably had the best year of his career. He shows up. He's healthy. You know, he's durable, tough to get off the field, and plays through injury. Getting him back, you know, and he's, you know, has a chance to go the free agent route if the Jackson work something out, but is that something you really like to see happen, have him remain here?
Yeah, you know, Dave and I and Gus, we've all talked, and he's a guy, you know, early in his career, he was really nicked up. He had that knee injury. I think the first season he came in here, he got hurt, and it kind of was a nagging thing. The biggest thing that helped Tice is moving him out to defensive end. He's not twisting and banging on it play after play, and he was healthy this year, and he was very productive. Now back to his future. Obviously, we'd like him to be a Jaguar. He's got to do what's best for him and his family, but at the same time, you know, we've talked, and we would love to have Tyson back because he adds so many different things. He can play end. He can play 3 technique. He can go in and rush in a need. So he can be a big part of what we do next year.
And that's key to what you guys try to do is having guys who can move around a little bit, right?
Yeah, you know, just because you never know when you get injuries. You know, we would like to only have 8 up. We were fortunate this year to have 9. But once you have 8 up, you need some dual role players. And you never know if somebody goes down during the game either. So that's very important that your backups or your rotating players can play multiple positions and play them well.
You talked a little about Senderic. I guess that's sort of your thing in the offseason. That's sort of the big concern in the offseason, isn't it? How do you approach that, and what is your level of concern?
Well, I mean, you know, any time a player comes back from an injury, they're going to be better their second year. But we know that Cinderic has unbelievable work ethic. He's going to do everything he can to get himself back ready to go. And we're fortunate enough last year signing Ziggy. He made some real good strides as the season went on. And so we see him as a quality player also. But, you know, in defensive line, you always have to continue to develop depth. And because you never know. You know, we've been blessed the last couple years, not a lot of major injuries early in the year. We've had a couple late. But, you know, you got to build depth across our D-line, and that's a priority for us as an organization.
You've been with Gus in a lot of stops, right? I want to say you coached with him 7 years, I think.
Yeah, we've coached six or seven, and then we coached together in college. You know, we were college roommates. So we've been together a long time. We think a lot. We're drastically different people, but yet we think football-wise exactly the same. So we understand that offense and defensive line is where you start a program. And, you know, they did it last year. They addressed our needs up front, and we played pretty well up front. And we're going to continue to develop both sides of the ball up front. That's where it starts.
You had to know that. You knew what you were getting when you bring in Red Bryant and Chris Clemens.
I mean, yes.
And so for that, even though you had some talent already to work with, to have guys that had been there, done that at a championship level, how important was that, you know, to have, I don't want to say, you know, coach in the locker room necessarily, that's your job, but for those guys to really give some veteran advice and help bring some of these younger guys along?
Well, that and then just the expectations of the group. You know, I mean, they played on a Super Bowl championship team, you know, number one defense when Gus and I were there. They know the expectations that it starts up front, and they brought that in immediately in our room with their leadership. Obviously, being with me, they knew how I handled them, how I handled other people in the room. And the expectations of our group and the continuity of our group went up immediately. And I think that has a lot to do with bringing young or veteran players like that in. It's competition every day in our room. We got a total of 9 guys that could probably play for a lot of people. And here they're biting at the bit trying to see who's going to get those reps. So it's a very competitive room, and you got to give credit to Dave and Gus for that, because we just get better if they're competitive.
This happened in the Giants game, but it seemed to happen a lot, where the defensive line, Cinderic talked about a lot, sort of took it upon itself when things weren't going well to say, look, we're the leaders, we're the veteran guys on this defense, even on this team. We've got to play well even when things aren't going well around us.
Yes.
I would think very proud of that. Over the course of the season, that happened a lot more often than not.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that we stressed once we got into OTAs last year. If you look around our room, we don't have a lot of young guys. You know, we have some second and third year players, but, and the way the structure of football set up is everybody's looking at us every snap. You know, we got our backs to them. We don't have a clue what the hell's going on back there. But they're looking at us, and we do set the tone. And I don't care how any other position group plays on our defense. We have to be responsible for us. And we set the tone, and they took it on themselves, and that's the mentality we have in our room. I don't care what any other position group does. I mean, obviously, I want everybody to play well, but dang it, you better take care of yourself first, because they're all watching you.
Todd Wash here with the Jaguar defensive line coach. Go ahead.
I was going to ask him how we solve this deal where no TV network can tell you and Gus apart. How do we get that fixed?
Well, I think what they noticed
that happens
is,
every week, right?
I'm a little slimmer. And I think what they do is they put my face on there because, well, I'm better looking.
Well,
and, you know, I've told him that, but I don't know how they get it messed up. Like I said, I'm a lot better looking than he is.
That I can buy. The little slimmer is like me saying I'm a little slimmer than Gus as well. Sure, we're both a little slimmer, and we both don't have a whole lot of hair on top of our head.
That's right.
Todd, what are you doing right now? Like, we know with offense, you got a lot of new coaches, and they're trying to integrate and get on the same page. How is your time spent? What are we taking you away from this morning?
You know, we've been in with the directors and scouting and stuff like that. We're looking at free agents right now up front, D-lines and mostly D-linemen right now for the next couple, 3 days. And from there, you know, in the afternoons, then we do nothing but scheme stuff, you know, figuring out what went wrong with our scheme, how we can make our scheme better, and also looking at, you know, just studies. What does this team do on third down? Why were they number one in third down? And you know, studying, trying to find a way to make sure that we get better this season.
If I could find a way to get you Ndamukong Suh, Jason Pierre-Paul, and maybe another D lineman with the third pick in the draft, you'll find a way to use them, right?
Well, I tell you what, yes, there is no doubt. And, you know, whoever we get, you know, it's going to be a good fit. You know, we want good players, but we also want really good people. You know, that's very, very important for the continuity of your room, make sure they're all working together. And that's one of the reasons I think this year we had some success is those guys up front are like a brotherhood. Mm-hmm. They really are. They hang out together. They spend time off the field, away from the building together, and it really shows. And, you know, we got to give credit to those guys building a unit.
It's been important to Gus and to Dave Caldwell, the way they built the team to focus on, you know, guys meshing and character mm-hmm. and all those things. Just tell us that you've been around Gus for a while. Now you've been around this team for a couple of years. Where is this team headed? I mean, I know there's a lot of excitement in this building. It's hard to describe to people out there who say, well, they've won seven games in the first 2 years of the Gus Bradley regime. But where are you guys headed?
Well, you know, I think we're definitely on the up. There's no doubt. The personnel and everything's gotten better ever since Dave has taken over. And now we just got to make sure we take care of the little things. And some of that stuff bit us in the hind end a little bit last year. But I see we're on the rise. We got a great, you know, young quarterback that's going to continue to develop. And, you know, the areas that we need good players, we got them. You know, so we just got to continue to do a good job of coaching and continue to get our players better, and winning is going to take care of itself.
Run game coordinator.
Yeah.
That doesn't change, right? You've been doing that anyway, but tell us what that entails.
Well, basically, you know, last season, you know, I did all the run game. Presented it to the defensive staff, and then this year it's going to be more of, you know, recommend these fronts, these coverages, mm-hmm. and Bob and I will sit down and talk what is the best to put these guys in position, what stresses our defense in these calls and what doesn't. And you know, like I said, been doing it the last couple of years. I did it in Seattle also under Gus. Mm-hmm. I did the run game, and him and I would talk about it from there. So it's not going to change a lot, but just, you know, more, I guess they're kind of, you know, helping us out defensively, to probably just give me a title, to be honest
gotcha.
With you. It ain't gonna change. It ain't gonna change much. There's a lot of respect. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Dwayne Walker, myself, or Robert Saleh. You know, we do it as a unit, mm-hmm. and we are a very close staff on defense. There's no egos in that room. And, the bottom line is we just want to make sure we get it right. Doesn't matter who's happy. It's just who gets it right. And then let's go out and let's win some football games.
He won't say this, so I'll say it for him. Future defensive coordinator.
Absolutely. I was just gonna say.
Future head coach someday.
I don't know if you have an agent, but I'm available because I have a feeling another season like we saw the Jags D-line, you may be in great demand. And I'll talk to John Osier here, see what he can do with Dave Caldwell to get you some of those guys I mentioned to you. I don't know. You know, you'll always take them, right?
Listening to me, he's in trouble. But yeah.
We got some good guys here.
Yes,
Todd, you had him playing very well last year, and we expect big things out of him again this year. Thanks for taking a few minutes
I appreciate
us.
It. It was my pleasure.
All right,
thank you.
Stop by any time. There you go. Todd Wash, Jaguar defensive line coach, back with more Jaguars today in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, thanks to Todd Wash for popping in. Jaguars defensive line coach Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Jerry Sullivan just popped his head
in.
He's wandering.
You guys, got the free agency scoop from Jerry.
I tried. I mean, I'm going to ask, right? I say he popped his head and he's like,
all those guys available. You know what they are, Mike. They're good players.
good players. I say, coach. Dez, ain't getting in. You ain't getting Demarius, right? We got Macklin, we got Cobb, we got Torrey. How you want to rank those guys for me right now?
They're all good players.
They're all good players. Yeah.
They all, hey, look, I get it. And I would expect, I've said this for years. I know a lot of organizations are like, well, we won't lie to you. We just won't tell you. I don't have a problem with teams spreading a little misinformation at this time of year. It's, you know, I get it. Some reporters feel like they're being taken advantage of or what have you. I just think this comes with the territory, you know, and the psychological, the subterfuge that goes on. It's fun, you know, in part, but you don't want to tip your hand in any way, shape, or form. And we see it year after year, John. Guys are linked to certain teams and end up there. There is information that gets out,
mm-hmm.
But I can't see how that helps anybody sign those guys.
Well, first of all, remember, this time of year is fun. It's not life or death. It's fun, and so have fun with it if you're a fan following it. But I will say this about the Jaguars. This regime, Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, is as honest, forthcoming, and transparent as you can expect an NFL team to be year-round. And that goes for this time, too. Now, again, Dave Caldwell is not going to come in and say, hey, John, here's my list.
Nor should he.
Right. But for the most part, they are very, very reasonable in terms of sharing what's going on around here.
Right. You don't get a whole lot of, that guy can't play. And then the next thing you know, they're trading up to grab that guy. Right. You're not going to get that. That's not their
right.
modus operandi.
I remember a couple years back when Caldwell had the second pick in the draft. By the time it came around, pretty transparent that they were probably going to take one of the two tackles.
Right.
And because there really wasn't any reason to hide that at that point. They had the number two pick, and it was pretty clear that Kansas City was going to take one of them. So, I mean, he didn't come out and say it, but he didn't try to sit there and say, okay, it could be one of seven or eight guys. I mean, you had a general idea if you were at that press conference of the general direction they were going to go. That's okay to do.
Yeah, and it wasn't a draft class that had obvious trade-up targets in it either.
Right.
You know, this I wanted to get to Tyler Dunn writing for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, kind of what we're talking about here with the free agent wide receivers, ranked the top 10 unrestricted free agent wide receivers. This is in part with conversations with James Lofton, because he was James Lofton was kind of going over the strengths and weaknesses of some of these guys, and also talking about whether or not they think Randall Cobb comes back. And I think basically they're like everyone else saying maybe. You know, I mean,
yeah, he's one of those guys that falls into the maybe category.
Right.
You pretty much know Dez and Demarius are going back because those teams aren't going to let those guys go.
He does.
Packers
bring
are more apt to let guys go, though.
They are, but he brings things that they may not have. And the point he made was they didn't really get to see Jared Aberderis this year, who they feel like is one of these young, up and coming, maybe slot machine type guys. You know, the slot receiver types of the future. He
slot
got hurt
machine
early.
Guy. I like that.
They call him slot
That's
machines.
Good.
Yeah, Wes Walker was called a slot machine for years up in New England, at least in the fantasy football world that I operate in. Anyway, you had Devontae Adams, who's not really the same kind of receiver. Aberderis maybe, but they didn't get to see much. So, you know, and you also had Jeff Janis, who's really fast, but was inactive for like the last 3 months of the season. Just, you know, I don't know, physically, mentally, where he was as far as his development. So you didn't see much from a couple of those guys. So I don't know if they feel they've got that natural replacement for him. But he ranked the top 10 unrestricted wide receivers. And I think a lot of people feel like they'd like to add one if it makes sense. Dez Bryant, he ranks number one ahead of Demarius Thomas. Doesn't matter. Those two are not getting away from their respective teams. We all agree. He ranks Macklin third. Said the Eagles and Macklin were reportedly close to a deal near the end of the season before Macklin switched agents. It showed he can come back from injury, and did so with a bang this year. 1,300 yards, 10 touchdowns, 85 catches. Nothing, you know, nothing to sneeze at there. I think he could stretch
a field.
He fits
what they do awfully well. It'd be tough. Again, I always have a tough time imagining guys like that getting away from the team that's got him.
Right, but at the same time, I'm not saying it's the exact same circumstance. They say, you know what, DeSean Jackson, you know, and maybe it was a dumb move ultimately to do, but they said, you know what, you're not fitting in with what we're doing. Maybe Macklin's going to want too much money. Mm-hmm. They do have Jordan Matthews coming up. That doesn't mean, you know, look, that system probably needs a guy like Matt. If they don't have him, they're going to be looking to replace him. But Randall Cobb, he ranked fourth. Okay, we've been
Which
talking a lot
sense,
about
because
him.
As we said, Green Bay is a little more, believes in their system, believes in their ability to develop.
Draft and develop.
So that's the kind of guy that sometimes gets away from that sort of team. Do they regret it? Who knows? But if it does, that makes a lot of sense.
Franchise tag number is supposed to be, I think, $12.7 million for wide receivers. That's what it's believed to be.
Okay.
So that's what it would cost Green Bay if they want to keep him on a one-year deal. He's only 24 years old. But the thing that comes with it is the return game, too. I mean, he's going to instantly upgrade your return game. And if you look, if I'm paying him all that money, I'll throw him out there on kickoff and punt returns, you know, and he can do both. So you've got those are your top four. Don't know if any of those are going to make it to unrestricted free agency. Then you got Torrey Smith. Okay. The Ravens, according to CBS, offered him a 5-year, $35 million deal. How much north of that do you go for Torrey Smith, who already indicated he'd like to remain in Baltimore? And the fact that he hasn't signed that deal makes me think he wants more from Baltimore. It would probably take even more to pry him away to a team that he would look at as, say, a lot further away from winning than the one he's presently got.
Well, yeah, we talked during a break. I think it's obvious the Jaguars are going to have to, quote-unquote, overpay because they're still in that building situation where they need to lure guys. you know, they still need to overcome the fact that they were 3-13, 4-12. So they're going to have to overpay. Is overpaying $10 million a year for him? If you're going to overpay a guy, that'd be the kind of guy you do it.
I've always looked at Torrey Smith and wondered why he doesn't put up bigger numbers, right? I mean, he's got a big physical body, mm-hmm. great speed, maybe some inconsistent hands at times, but some of the – Demaryius Thomas had 9 drops this year.
Receivers drop balls.
They do. So I've described him to me not as fast as Marquise Lee, maybe, but he's that cross
he's
between –
He's pretty fast.
He is pretty yeah. fast, right? And he's got size not – maybe as big as Allen Robinson,
he's
but approaching
that. He's got game speed. Every time you look up, he's running past
somebody. Getting behind guys. So, you know? But it does make me wonder, because Flacco's got arguably the biggest arm in the league. And I get it. That's not necessarily their philosophy. And you also had Steve Smith to feed this year. But I always thought Torrey Smith should be putting up bigger numbers. 49 catches for only 767 yards. He did score 11 touchdowns this year. But I think it would be an upgrade to the Jaguar wide receiver core.
I think it'd be a huge upgrade.
And that's what you're looking to do.
Right.
Even if it doesn't, even if Torrey Smith or whoever it is doesn't come here and make a Pro Bowl, which so often free agents don't pan out on that level. This is still a franchise that needs to upgrade its overall talent base.
They're talking about in recent years, by the way, in this article, probably the only guys that have done that. Vincent Jackson, his first year with the Bucs, made the Pro Bowl, and then Emmanuel Sanders was like an alternate this year with the Peyton Manning-led Bronco offense. Michael Crabtree came in 6th on this list. And we had Matt Williamson on from ESPN, Scouts Inc. branch mm-hmm. of ESPN. He said that was probably the guy, because of all the other factors that we're talking about, makes the most sense for a team like Jacksonville. Like he's proven mm-hmm. to some degree. He's got a skill set, and keep in mind, he had the Achilles injury in the 2013 offseason, so now he's going to be 2 years removed from that. If he can stay healthy,
that can still be a tough one to come back with.
It can be.
Even a year out.
But he could regain some of his explosiveness
sure.
now because he's 2 years away. He did play last year and was able to stay on the field for the most part.
What were his numbers last year?
68 catches, but only 698 yards, so he's only averaging about 10 yards a pop at 4 touchdowns. Now, granted, that's not exactly the most wide open offense, but he went from
right.
being Kaepernick's kind of go-to guy. You
yeah.
remember they took
sure.
what? How many did he get? All 4 of those shots in the Super Bowl. Remember they
he
threw
got at least 3 of
like
them.
Like 3 of those shots from inside the 5-yard line to win the Super Bowl were going to Crabtree.
And he's the kind, you know, again, I don't think you're expecting a 1,500-yard guy in France. You might expect it, but you're probably not going to get it. So if he comes in and becomes a – or if somebody like that comes in and becomes a guy that you can rely on for 800 yards to be a third down converting guy, it still makes you better. So that's the sort of thing you might expect. Again, these top guys are going to go away, and all of a sudden you'll be looking at free agency like, whoa, where'd everybody go? Well, they've re-signed with their old teams. So guys like we're talking about – makes sense. May not be a 1,200-yard guy, but still a guy who can help your franchise.
The point being, if you don't get one of these top 6, you can argue Cecil Shorts is as good as anybody else left out there. And if I think most Jaguar fans would say, well, you know, Cecil's probably played his last snap here simply because, I think primarily because of the injury issue, to me.
Sure. And he's going to go somewhere, and we said it as soon as we started talking about him not being a part of Jacksonville's future. Look, he's going to go somewhere, and he's going to be probably a pretty decent third option for some NFL team. And when he is, some Jaguar fans will freak out.
How do we let him go?
Right. Yeah. Just understand you have to make decisions on guys like that. And we've been talking about fit. And while I think Crabtree is a guy that can be an upgrade for this roster, with what they're missing at the wide receiver core right now, which is just the guy to take the top off the defense, they don't have that. That's why if you're going to take the top 4 options off the board for me, if Torrey Smith mm-hmm. does get a sniff of it, that's the guy to me. Because
I agree.
While Crabtree, I do think, can be a guy that catches 60, 70 passes for you.
But he's going to take the top off.
Right. He fills the same role that Allen Robinson does and what you want to do with your wide receiver core. I'm not saying they're not better with Michael Crabtree on the field. I think they're a lot better with Torrey Smith
right.
as opposed to Crabtree coming in for this offense with what they have, with Robinson as kind of that third down guy, Marquise Lee as a move guy, and Torrey Smith as somebody that can run that deep route.
And that's, again, why you don't just want to play the game of, here's the top 8 receivers, a 3 off the board, 4 we didn't get, 5 we barely didn't get, well, let's go get number 6, and number 6 is Crabtree. make sure that you go down the list until you find a guy that fits what you want to do.
The other guys that rounded out the top 10, by the way, Eddie Royal, who we're talking on the break, scored 15 touchdowns the last 2 years, but he's also catching from Phillip Rivers, and he's also, it's interesting to watch how that offense operated. They had different guys at various times, including Keenan Allen, who they were trying to feature more, and Royal's kind of almost forgotten man by defenses, it seems like. He comes out of the slot, has had this knack over the last few years, taking screen passes and scoring touchdowns inside the 15, 10-yard line area. Scored, obviously, 15 of them in the last 2 years.
Put it this way, would you be shocked if they traded places if Cecil put up Eddie Royal numbers?
No, not really.
You stayed healthy.
Right. Assuming you stayed healthy and he got in a rhythm with Phillip Rivers, you could definitely see that. Kenny Britt is interesting to me just because of his career average is over 15 yards per catch.
He's got talent.
He does have talent. Now, he's got a ton of knucklehead factor that comes with him. He says he wants to stay in St. Louis with Jeff Fisher, who's been the coach that's kind of believed in him along the way. But
first round guy.
If I were a free agent, I'd always say I want to stay with the team, because why cut down your chances? Make other teams.
They all say they want to stay with
the team. Right?
Unless they're really, really mad.
Unless somebody offers me more money,
right,
and then I want to go to that team. And then Hakeem Nicks is the last one. I don't have any particular interest in Hakeem Nicks.
We've also got to remember, usually when they say that, they're usually speaking either to the media in the hometown right after the season, in a season-ending situation, or they're at the Super Bowl where the hometown guy is grabbing them. Hey, what about coming back? Yeah, I want to come back.
Right, right.
So, and again, most of them do want to come back. You want to go back to what's familiar. If the price is right, you feel comfortable there, it's fine. But not all these guys who say they want to go back are going back.
Yeah. Hey, Cecil Shorts, you'd love to be back in Jacksonville. What if Wes Welker retires and Denver wants to give you a two-year deal?
Now, I think Cecil legitimately does. I mean,
I get that, and I'm not questioning that. But
I get
know what the opportunity is going to be somewhere else. Right now, look, you're a guy like Dez Bryant. You don't have to say anything, because if they're dumb enough to let you get away, you're going to get crazy offers. So you're going to have your.
You ask Dez that, he's like, yeah, I'm going to go back to Dallas, but I'm going to. I'm going to be cashing checks either
way,
Mike.
He's going to be cashing crazy checks. All right, and Dominican Sue, I want to be back with the Lions. All right, or whatever, or whoever's going to pay me $20 million a season on average.
If he's homesick, it'll be a good homesick.
$26 million is the franchise number for Dominican Sue, which, with already Calvin Johnson and Stafford having two really big contracts, I can't see how, unless they get a deal done with him, how they're going to afford to franchise him.
You are to franchise him, but some respected people think that the Lions are the leader in the clubhouse for him.
Well, that may be the case. Right. I mean, they are they have the exclusive negotiating window
right
now, which is big. And, they say it's going to be a feeding frenzy. Like 12 to 15 teams are going to throw crazy money at Ndamukong Suh. And maybe it's not crazy if he can, play the way you expect him to play based on that kind of money.
Yeah. It's rare in this league to have difference-making, other teammates stand on the sidelines to watch you play talent, and he's got one of those.
Yeah. All right, so there is a look, at least one man's opinion, who the top 10 unrestricted free agent wide receivers are. Cecil Shorts, as we said, just to kind of give you a little perspective, if you feel like the Jags need to upgrade from what you've seen, the options to upgrade may dwindle right before your eyes before March 10th gets here, a month away from tomorrow. Coming up next, the Tom Bush Family Dealership fan feedback question of the day in honor of Jimmy Smith's birthday. He had a couple of nicknames here with the Jaguars. What's your favorite nickname all time for any Jaguar player? We'll get into that. Coming up, Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down to home stretch, Jaguars Today. Combine for you next week, right, Johnny O?
I will be in Indy.
You're downtown
Indy.
Are you like the mayor of Indy?
I'm not the mayor.
When you go back?
Or dominate the calendar, NFL. Keep it rolling.
Indy's a good downtown.
Oh, it's a very good downtown. Do Colt fans think you're a traitor because you came back to the homestead?
Nah, not really. I mean, different era up there, different time. I'll put it this way. I would far rather be working in Jacksonville. I'm very, very, very
nothing you'd rather be doing than sitting across from us right now on the Jaguars Today square table. We're not the Jags of the round table.
No.
I noticed in your latest column.
We have a square table.
Once again, they're wondering when's the round table actually going to show up.
We're a little fast and loose with the titles around here.
I do. Running game coordinator, whatever that means to you. That's what Todd Wash will be doing.
Senior writer, whatever.
We appreciate Todd Wash joining us today. Our question of the day in honor of Jimmy Smith's 46th birthday. Jay Smooth, he, of course, was the Lightning to Keenan McCardell's Thunder and the Thunder and Lightning combo nickname that those guys had. We asked you today, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, what's your favorite Jaguar nickname throughout the years, Tony?
What
did we get?
Here's what we got from Stevie Hallen at Irish Jaguar. Not really a nickname, more of a pun, but I always love Natron Means Business. From Ronald Smooth for the best Jags receiver at Jimmy Smith Jags. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Duval Doom, gotta be honest, I don't love the guy, but Pot Roast was pretty good. From Hadari, tie between Jimmy Smooth Smith and Tony Big Cat McDaniel. From Cam, we got Aaron Killabees Beasley. From Eric, I always like Greg the Mangler Huntington. Just a great name for a lineman.
That is pretty good.
That is good. From Paul, Pot Roast, but I really hope Bubblegum Grot sticks. Hashtag Rimshot.
Oh, no.
From Jags Junior Rider, most unknown Jags practice squad player, Joe Anoa'i. I don't know how you say that name. Whose nickname is now Roman Reigns of the WWE.
Is that right?
If he says so.
So we should have O'Halloran here to comment on this.
And from Black Dog Express, I got to go with the B2 Bomber, baby. The future is now.
That's not bad. I like the B2 Bomber for Blake.
What about Fat Tony? Really Fat Tony count?
Hey, I don't know if he ever played a snap
not
for
a
the squad.
Right.
I don't know if he made the roster. That's what I was going with.
Okay,
you know, player. But, I mean, Fat Tony's outstanding. Much of the same stuff. Your pocket Hercules, somebody threw it. Kyle Brady, nickname. What do you got?
I don't remember one.
I don't know if this is an official one. What do you got? Kyle, just know I love you, okay? Tony, what do you got? Anything for Kyle Brady?
I mean, I've heard some nicknames for him. I remember
have you ever
3
heard
yards in a cloud of dust.
That was my favorite guy. That's kind of what I refer to Kyle at. You know, always good for 3 yard gain on 3rd and 7.
It seemed to be the way
they utilized him, right?
Yeah, I left a couple years into Kyle.
So. Tristan went with the White Whale. Hey, anybody heard that one?
I've not heard that one either,
Kyle. I'm sure it was meant in the most complimentary fashion. Pot Roast probably wins the day for me. Pot Roast is a great nickname.
And somebody said earlier, didn't really like the guy. Pot Roast, great guy to be around. So, I mean, and...
Yeah, he seemed like a good enough guy.
Yeah.
I mean, hang out with him.
Odd situation, right? I mean, but very respectful with the media. I enjoyed covering Terrence as much as I've enjoyed covering anybody around here outside, maybe Cecil. And, I mean, just a very good guy.
Hard to describe how Cecil is. I mean, how much you really, from our standpoint, we talk about this in terms of Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell all the time. I want these guys to win because I want anyone to win here with the Jets.
Sure.
Okay. But if these guys in particular win, it's going to be the greatest atmosphere for the fans of this team, to come here and to be able to have the honor of working in the building every single day if they're winning with the formula that they're building, you know, and you hear Todd Wash talk about it. We're as concerned with the fit. Well, those guys coming in our locker room as well as how they play. And, you know, look, I get it. Some teams are able to take on malcontents and kind of swallow that up in the culture. I think you've got to be careful doing that when you haven't established a winning formula.
Yeah, they're getting there. I mean, this culture is pretty strong in this locker room, especially for a team that hasn't won a lot. And Dave Caldwell said right after the season, and he said this ever since he got here, they're not looking for choir boys. They will take some guys who, you know, the background doesn't have to be pristine. Now, I don't know where that stops. I'm sure it's case by case. You look at everything. But this is not a case where just because somebody has had an issue that you've read about that they are off the list. So,
whereas, you know, and it's different. I mean, Ndamukong Suh is kind of a guy, and he's maybe, if he gets free, pursued by everybody and maybe a pipe dream.
Yeah.
But he's kind of a guy that is more of a, you know, he's got that dirty reputation
sure.
to him. But he's not out there necessarily. You know, he's not out there. I mean,
his availability hasn't been a huge issue. He's only missed a couple of games now.
Right. Whereas Greg Hardy was accused of something much more significant. That's what I'm talking about.
And you've got to figure, you know, anything with Hardy, you know, it's going to be a short leash. You know, I mean, I already having some suspense. I mean, that seems a more tenuous situation, and that's not a legal analysis on my part. You would think it's tenuous. I don't know that Sue is that big of a, oh my goodness, what are we getting into thing here, as some people might think.
Right. But again, throw all the money you want at it. I think, according to the winds that blow through the NFL, information-wise, a lot of teams are going to be prepared to make a $20 million a year on average
sure.
offer to them. So, you know, you're probably going to have to spend significantly more than anybody else. And quite honestly, I mean, it's tough to say House and Derek Marks is going to come back, but you look at those two guys, this is not the greatest position of weakness by far. And as we told, you know, kind of joking with Todd Wash, he'd find a way to use all those guys if you had them at your disposal.
Sue is one of those guys that you would figure out a way to use them. Again, I don't know if it's realistic to think they're going to get involved with that and be the highest bidder and everything that's going to entail. Is that the best way to spend your money? I don't know.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thanks to Todd Wash for stopping by. We encourage you to read the many musings of the senior writer for Jaguars.com, Mr. John Osier. And you've got, Jaguars This Week coming up on Wednesday. What else do you have?
Well, I won't be here for Jaguars This Week. I'm actually taking my son up to see some colleges.
Oh,
so
is that right?
Tomorrow is my last day.
College tour this week
but,
with John Osier.
Yes, we'll have Jaguars This Week, Jags at the Round Table. We'll have our weekly fair.
I think you should wear a GoPro on your head as you visit the colleges and do something for the site, because people want to know about the life and times.
People do want to know.
They do. All right, John.
I get this one a little quiet.
Good to see you. Thanks again to Todd Wash for popping in, and we hope to grab a few more assistant coaches throughout the course of this week coming up. That does it for us today. For Fat Tony, for John Osier, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime coming up next. Thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.